He told me to set to, as soon as I was conscious in my physical body, and make notes of what I had done during the night and that immediately I had bathed and eaten, I should waste no time in writing down in detail all that I remembered. Almost as soon as my guide had finished speaking, I felt myself gradually sliding into my body again and I woke without having any break of consciousness, as he had hoped. I sat up in bed, drew towards me a pad and pencil that I had placed beside my bed and started to make notes of all that had happened during the night. It was fortunate that I was told to make notes immediately, for I found that even with the headings that I had made, it was difficult to remember exactly what had happened, when, later on, I wrote out my report in full. However, I shall see how faithful my memory has been when I show this record to my visitor tomorrow, for he said he would come then to continue his talks. Chapter 5. It was no use. Last night I made all my preparations and concentrated on seeing myself in a mirror, but this morning I remember absolutely nothing. I went to sleep almost as soon as my head touched the pillow, for I suppose I was tired after all the concentration on my report yesterday, and it seemed only a very short time before I awoke this morning, bright and early, after a dreamless night's rest. Yes, not even a dream disturbed my slumbers, and I must say I am disappointed, though possibly I was expecting too much. In an hour's time my Indian friend will be here and perhaps he will explain why I failed last night in such a dismal fashion. Just at 11 o'clock, as I was looking through my notes uncertain as to what he would think about them, he opened the door. Obviously he knew that I was a little excited, wondering whether I had failed to remember a lot about my astral journey, for his eyes twinkled as he asked me if my report was ready. He never seems to laugh, though his eyes often smile, and there is no doubt at all about his having a very highly developed sense of humor. Having read my notes, he complimented me on having remembered so much and said that for a first attempt it was distinctly above the average. I asked him if I had forgotten much, to which he replied that I had certainly failed to notice quite a lot when we were under the sea. Also, I had not remembered much of what transpired when we were trying to help the young fighter pilot immediately after he had been shot down. These omissions were unimportant, the main thing being that I had proved for myself it is possible to remember what is done outside the body, and the perfecting of the bringing through process of the business was now only a matter of time and concentration. But why couldn't I remember anything this morning? He smiled as he pointed out that I must not expect to be successful all at once, and that I must be prepared for my disappointments, yet if I were determined to succeed, he would help me in every way possible. He continued, "Your adventures of the night before, last have made my task of describing the astral plane to you much easier than it was before, for now you know from experience something of what I have endeavored to explain to you in mere words. You have therefore learnt the first lesson in what we call occult wisdom, which is that you must never believe in a credulous way anything that you are told. You must not disbelieve it either, for that would be foolish. The only method to adopt is to accept as a possibility the things that you are told, then, to set about finding out the way to prove those things for yourself. Now what have we proved so far? That is where I wish to begin. You have proved that it is possible to have experiences apart from your physical body. You have proved that death is not what you thought it was, for you have seen your brother Charles and you know that he is very much alive indeed, though invisible to you whilst you are functioning in your physical body. You have talked to him, and this should be sufficient proof that he exists in a region where you can follow him at stated times. You are aware that although Charles still knows very little of astral plane conditions, you could not honestly say he was suffering, nor that his life was a miserable one and something from which a man would naturally shrink. You therefore have taken one step towards getting rid of the fear of death, the fear which makes such a deep impression on so many men living in the world. Even from your present knowledge you know that death is not the tragedy it is so often called, and that in some cases it might easily be considered not only a relief, but also a great blessing. You have seen for yourself that existence after death is to a great extent governed by the type of life lived in the world. You can appreciate that those who are artistically inclined or interested in one or other of the specific branches of art, such as music, painting, literature or philosophy, or even those whose special interest is travel, are well catered for after death. On the other hand, you can also appreciate that those whose lives here are purely material, whose amusements and interests depend on the physical body, who primarily are drawn to sport, to good living, to forms of business which have as their goal the making of money, are going to find time hanging heavily on their hands after death, until they realize that they can develop new interests. I asked, how can one develop new interests after death? In the same way as you could have developed them during your lifetime, had you possessed sufficient leisure and the money to provide fees for the necessary tuition. At the astral level, although you have not yet seen them for yourself, schools exist, because of the great need of training permanent inhabitants of that world in those interests, which they lack, for the life that is before them. These schools serve a dual purpose. They not only teach pupils all about conditions at the astral level and how best they can employ the conditions ruling there for their pleasure and education, but also provide courses of instruction in all the various matters for which physical plane conditions are not essential for carrying them out. P68. Most of the true musicians, artists, philosophers and those who were teachers or professors in the physical world obtain great joy from passing on some of their knowledge and experience to those who are lacking in it but who are sufficiently interested to want to learn. The absence of the time factor, the absence of the necessity to sleep 8 hours out of the 24, again helps considerably. If experts in their particular subjects give even as little as 3 or 4 hours a day to training new students, the time given is in no way a hardship, for they still have the remaining 20 hours out of each day for their own devices. In actual practice, it works out that many of these ex-teachers and specialists in their particular arts obtain so much pleasure from molding new material into form, that they attach themselves quite voluntarily to these schools and often spend more than half their time at the astral level teaching others the rudiments of their arts, or in some cases helping those who have already developed some proficiency to become adepts under the concentrated tuition that is available in the astral world. Not only do these schools play a tremendous part in the life of the astral world, but they undoubtedly influence the future lives of their pupils. If, at the astral level, a man has developed a love of any of the arts or sciences, in his next life at the physical level he is born with a desire to continue that study, and so we find children showing at an early age an enthusiastic aptitude for one thing or another, which perhaps is not in any way a characteristic of their parents. Such leanings towards an art should always be encouraged. Parents often argue that this enthusiasm should be discouraged, as they themselves have managed to lead successful lives without such dabbling. This is a great mistake, however. And if the parents perceive that the craving of the child is a perfectly natural one, that it is really only anxious to carry on with the training which was begun during its last astral carefree life, they would probably realize that such cravings should be encouraged and not squashed, as so often they are. Both in this world and the next, we are all the time progressing and making our future lives happier and fuller. The permanent inhabitants find out these schools in different ways and always at a stage when they are of most use. When they first realize that they are living in the astral world, it is quite useless to mention such things to them, for they will at once assure you that they have no desire to go to school again. They want to enjoy themselves. For the first few months, the opportunity of traveling round the world and seeing all the countries they not had the chance of visiting whilst they were in this world usually satisfies them. You will remember that Roy Chapman, your brother's friend, admitted that at times he felt bored. He had done all these things. He had made a few friends, of course, and enjoyed taking them out to dinners and shows, to picnics and the like, but that palls after a time. Roy was a keen golfer in his lifetime, but golf is not the interesting game in the astral world that it is here. Such a man as Roy will certainly tire of all the things that he has been doing for the last 6 months or so. And when he does, he will not hesitate to express his boredom to others whom he meets in that world. Then one day someone to whom he has been introduced will mention to him the opportunity that exists for increasing one's knowledge or developing along a particular line of art or study. He will not be enthusiastic at first, but he soon will realize that learning something entirely new will fill in the long hours. Eventually his interest will be aroused, and yet another will have passed from the stage of materialist to the life that makes our sojourn at the astral level all too short. There are others to whom these new interests have no appeal. They are usually the old married couples, who have developed a taste for domestic life. All they have ever aspired to was to have a home, a garden, and to live a quiet life amongst their friends. They like to listen to the radio, have a television set and such things. Their happiness is dependent upon being together. They can carry on this type of life at the astral level, without any difficulty whatever. If the man dies first, he wanders round looking miserable and lonely at the hours when his wife is awake, and is there to meet her as soon as she gets out of her body at the time when she falls asleep. To suggest to such a man that there are schools where he can learn something, is usually a waste of time. He scorns the idea. All he wants is a comfortable home with his partner. He sets to find out the ways and means of living in such a way as he and his wife will enjoy when reunited. He learns that it is simplicity itself to have a house and garden exactly in accordance with his own pet ideas merely by expressing a desire for such, in thought. He finds the most beautiful spot available, and when his wife comes over, they build their dream house and furnish it exactly as they would have loved to do in the world, had they had the necessary means to do so. Now a thought produces just the things they desire, and frequently they think of wonderful labor-saving appliances. Sometimes these are seen by businessmen who make notes of them, and in their next life they invent similar things. This old couple has an ultra-modern stereo set, and they create in thought the required number of servants to do their bidding. They create a garden with any form of flower or fruit in it that they would like, for here there is no limitation of climate. They entertain their friends, they enjoy showing off their inventions and live very happily in the astral plane. Frequently they link up with pets they have had on Earth, or adopt others. This blissful state of the elderly couple just described is not as general as might be supposed. Men and women marry for various reasons. Sometimes it is physical attraction, which draws them together, sometimes wealth, even loneliness plays its part in the linking up of individuals. It is very seldom that we see what we would describe as ideal pair, two people whose outlook on life dovetails, whose standing in evolution is similar, each having sufficient intelligence to be able to enter into the problems of the other. Such unions are rare and, occultly, are not to be greatly desired, as it is a good thing for an evolved man to be attracted in some particular way to a less evolved partner. When one hears such a remark as, "What a pity John married Mary, so unsuited, don't you think?" one must realize that if the speaker had more experience, he would know that both these young people are destined to benefit considerably from the few years they spend together. The immediate outcome of such an apparently unsuitable union is invariably a series of difficulties for both parties. There is always a clash of interests. Possibly the man was originally drawn to the woman through her physical attractions. After a time that draw becomes less, though it is unlikely that it would cease to function altogether, then the two people are thrown back on companionship as the only bond to hold them together. But companionship is not easy when the tastes and desires of two individuals are dissimilar. In the case where the man is the more evolved of the two, his interests lie in books, in music, in the serious side of life, whereas the woman wants to go to any place of amusement where her friends of the moment are going. A clash of ideas results, and there are many arguments and disagreements. If there are no children, sometimes the marriage breaks up, solely on account of the incompatibility of temperaments, but it is a great pity when this happens, because it is through the inequality of the two people concerned that much knowledge and experience can be gained. The man has to learn a method of meeting his partner halfway. When he ponders over ways and means of doing this, he realizes that he must start by raising his wife's interests towards his educational level, at the same time making sure that she does not realize what he is endeavoring to do, or she will immediately develop an Bar complex. He must learn to be patient when, through her inexperience, she presses for things he knows to be unwise or unnecessary. Knowing that to do so is wrong, sometimes he must give way in order that she may see the results of the mistake which has been made. The woman will not always wish to be led, even when subconsciously she realizes that her partner in life is wiser than she. If two such people can spend a lifetime together, the benefits to both are great indeed, for one will have had the advantage of a superior intelligence and a greater experience to guide her and develop her character, whereas the other has had to learn the value of patience, of tact, of the necessity to see things from another's point of view, a view which through lack of experience must be more limited than his own. After death, such people do not necessarily carry on their lives together. The man probably feels that he wishes to spend his time with greater minds than his own, whereas the woman, who for many earthly years has been forced to live at high pressure, endeavoring to produce a standard, which was always something of an effort for her, now wishes to sit back and take things easy for a time. Usually, after a short period of relative inactivity, she finds that the seeds sown during her lifetime have now brought forth a strong desire to continue the development already begun. She finds that she no longer derives complete satisfaction from the artificial enjoyments she once longed for and bullied her unresponsive husband to provide for her. Her mental appetite has been whetted and she finds it is impossible for her to go back to the standards which were natural to her at the time of her marriage on the physical plane. She will tell you that she did not have a particularly happy life, but now that it is over, she will be glad that fate decreed that the experience should have been hers. It often happens that two people who have lived together for a whole lifetime do not contact each other again, either after death or in future lives. Each has served the other, both have benefited by being brought together for a period of time, but their outlook on life is too different for either to be naturally attracted to the other. In such an instance, it is possible that the man had lived at least 50 to 100 lives more than the woman. Naturally, his understanding of the vast plan would be greater than hers, his reservoir of knowledge, that accumulation of experience from past lives, would be greater than hers, and in every way he could be regarded as a superior being. But do not forget that 100 lives previous to this one he was in the same place as his wife of the moment, and he probably benefited from having been forced to spend a lifetime with someone much more highly developed than himself. You have probably heard it said that every person has what is known as a soulmate and that you should always be on the lookout for such a person. It is quite true that soulmates exist, for originally when a life force is sent out by divine power, the force emerges into life as twin forms, one male, one female. Both these forms evolve quite separately, each having its quota of lives in male and female bodies, but on special occasions, when a great work has to be done, these two entities are sometimes brought together, because the inspiration of the one enables the other to carry out the gigantic task which has to be accomplished. A great man who has achieved his goal has often said that he could never have done it without the help, the advice and the strengthening power of his wife. This need not mean that they were soulmates, but it may mean just that, and when this is so, the two people seem to act as one great unit. They not only think the same thoughts, but they feel instinctively what is right for both of them. It is of course the perfect blending of the positive and negative, of the male and female in nature. It would not be a good thing for us always to have lives with our soulmates, for under such circumstances we should tend to grow very selfish. We would never learn to see things from the other's points of view, to deal with opposite ideas, to give way in order to achieve something rather than to stand firm and produce nothing. These illustrations give you some small idea of the way in which egos are assisted along their evolutionary journey. It is through difficulties such as having to live with individuals who do not synchronize in every way that we learn true tolerance. A pleasant and peaceful life is not necessarily the best life. We progress most quickly along the evolutionary path through suffering and what often seem hard and ruthless methods. Each life is a day in the school of evolution and, if we are to carry out the purpose of which we were sent into incarnation, we cannot afford to waste any opportunities. Tomorrow I shall tell you a few facts about the non-human inhabitants of the astral plane, after which I shall take you for another astral journey so that you may see for yourself that astral human beings conform to what may be described as the normal reactions, covering the individual concerned in the physical plane. Chapter 6, The prospect of being taken on another astral journey by my Indian teacher has made me quite excited, and thinking about what may happen has taken away some of the disappointment I feel in not yet having achieved any results when alone. Last night I concentrated on seeing myself lying on my bed, as I certainly did the night I was helped. When I woke this morning I felt well rested. I remembered it had taken me a long time to go to sleep, but of what had happened to me after I lost consciousness, I could recall absolutely nothing. I must find out how this business of bringing things through can be accomplished. I know it is no use worrying about not being able to learn the tricks of the trade at once, for worrying more often hinders than helps. I suppose the only thing I can do is to persevere with this concentration, which I am told is so important a part of the proceedings, until I make some small beginning from which to work. It is useless feeling disappointed. My Indian friend was standing behind me where I was writing. I had not heard him open the door. That is what happens in so many instances. People are shown a glimpse of the truth, and because they cannot at once do the things that they know are possible for others, they get discouraged and give up trying. Often people say, "Obviously, this occult life is not for me," whereas all that is necessary to achieve results is a little patience and the determination to break through the wall which separates our worldly existence from the life we lead when asleep. Do not expect too much, my friend. Remember, it is less than 2 weeks since you sat here bowed in grief, not even knowing for certain that death was the logical sequence of life. Now at least you know something, and soon you will be given the opportunity of knowing more. You are thinking, why do not more people know these things? Perhaps they have not asked for knowledge, for help, as you asked. Perhaps they are quite satisfied with one of the many orthodox religions, which tell them to have faith and to believe that everything sent is the will of God. All happenings are certainly the will of God, but it is easier if we realize why such things are. It is easier if there is a logical answer to every question, also if it is made possible for each individual who takes the trouble to prove things for himself, thereby making the acceptance of statements made on a basis of faith unnecessary. Faith is always good, but knowledge is better. You must have faith whilst acquiring knowledge, and whatever happens, you must never lose heart. Evolution is a slow process and can seldom be hurried, though the activities of an individual can be inspired by encouragement and by help given at the right moment. So far you have seen only a tiny sector of the astral world, the sector usually occupied by those who have recently passed from this world through the portal known as death. Once you have established yourself as an inhabitant of the astral world, you seldom visit such places, but you can go if you wish. You do from time to time. For example, when you meet special friends and relations were to die and so require some help from the regular inhabitants, in exactly the same way that you require help from friends living in a foreign country which you are visiting as a tourist or as a new settler. The astral world is divided into what are known as spheres, levels or subplanes. It is necessary to know that such spheres exist or you will never be able to understand how the machinery of this world operates. Most teachers illustrate their point by asking their students to understand the densest sphere of the astral world as being the conditions which exist whilst standing on the ground. In this sphere there is a counterpart of everything that exists in the physical world. Where there is a town or a building in the physical world, there also, in the astral matter, is the counterpart or reflection of that town or building, which you can see quite clearly when you function at the astral level in your astral body. Imagine the astral counterpart of Piccadilly Circus, London, which you visited a few nights ago, as representing the noisy lowest sphere. Then imagine a similar world, say 1 mile above the lowest world, to which one can transport oneself in a second's time by an effort of will. This corresponds to the second sphere of the astral world, less dense than the first sphere, but still rather materialistic and akin to physical plane conditions. If you were existing 1 mile above London, you might still hear something of the roar of London's traffic and noise that is always part of the life of a great city, but that would be only a murmur compared with the noise you hear standing on the ground floor, as it were. Now imagine a third sphere of consciousness yet another mile above the second sphere, and you can visualize the probability that when you are living in the third sphere of the astral world you would be so far removed from the noise and bustle of London town, that you would not only be unaffected by its existence, but would be more or less unconscious of it. There are seven spheres of consciousness in the astral world, each less material than the one below it, and permanent inhabitants can spend their astral lives on any of these spheres, according to their natural desires. For example, a man may spend a few weeks on the first sphere, then the next 2 years on the second sphere, later passing to the third or fourth, as his habits and desires become less material and more artistic, intellectual or spiritual. Thus there is never any possibility of overcrowding in this world. In this physical world a man's choice of where he will live is limited. On account of his work, through which he earns the money necessary for existing here, he may be forced to live in places which he could not otherwise choose. Many parts are uninhabitable owing to climate or other difficulties. A man cannot exist comfortably at either the North or the South Pole owing to extreme cold and other limitations such as lack of sunshine and daylight at certain times of the year. He cannot live in many of the existing deserts, owing to lack of water. He cannot live in the dense jungles, for there are wild beasts, which must first be exterminated before it is safe to build a house to live in. In the astral world, he does not encounter these limitations. The climate is the same at the North or South Poles as anywhere else on the astral plane. There is now here any limitation of daylight, as the light is everywhere the same for 24 hours of every day. In the desert he does not need water for his existence. If he wishes to live in the astral counterpart of the jungles, he can. There are no wild beasts to attack him, for just as a man learns he cannot harm an animal in the astral world, so the animals learn that they cannot harm man. In addition, there are seven spheres of consciousness to choose from, so it is always possible to obtain the conditions required to make practicable the type of life desired, amidst surroundings which are in accordance with a man's emotional, mental and spiritual development. Once you get a grasp of these different types of existence which make up the life which follows this one here, it will be easy for you to see how all parts of the jigsaw puzzle fall perfectly into their places, and the evolutionary path becomes a logical sequence of events controlled by natural laws, sound in theory as well as in practice. All these facts are explained and taught in the schools, which exist on some of the astral spheres, and it is usually through these schools which a man hears about, in one way or another, at the appropriate time, that the urge or desire to pass from one sphere to another is born. In these schools the astral entity is shown the way in which to transport himself from one level to another, the change being brought about through an effort of will made in a particular way, for although the matter of which an individual sphere is composed is different from the matter of which the other spheres are composed, our astral bodies include matter similar to that of all the spheres, and it is only a question of making active the atoms in our bodies relative to the sphere concerned, to enable us to function fully in the sphere chosen. A further point, which the astral entity is taught, is that a man functioning on the second sphere cannot contact or communicate with one functioning on the first sphere, nor a man on the third with one on the second. If a man living at the third level wishes for any reason to get into touch with a person living on the first level, he must again descend to the first level by an action of will, which, as I said, makes the first sphere atoms in his body become active again. The same process is applied when going up or down. The life expressed at the different spheres is separate and to all intents and purposes self-contained, in exactly the same way that life in England is separate and different from life in India.